All right, this is Pure Decking number 37 for September the 6th, 1943, and I'm having too much fun trying to play with the DJ software and not knowing what the hell I'm doing. Tonight we've got Heavy Metal, Mr. Tack, and Nox. Oh, right, I'm Morbs. I have a post-it note saying introduce your own damn self, and I keep forgetting. Wow.
That's why RU has you introduce him on I Have Nothing.
No, that's
exactly.
True. Yeah,
I always forget I'm here.
Well, I think like the first 10 shows of Pure Decking, I never said who I was.
So yeah, remember right?
I just assumed. It's like you know what this is. You know who I am. Let's go. So yeah, that'd be kind of fun to do actually. Just you know, straight up. You've already downloaded this. You know what it is. I don't need to introduce a damn thing. So a little bit of station news. NR7, Nameless Review 7, came back. We did the first of the new ones yesterday, and I forgot to get the actual number of that show from BSV, so I need to I need to figure out what I'm supposed to call it before I post it. But
what number would that be?
I don't know.
It's been a while.
We got a little over, I'm wanting to say like 10 or 15 of the old one on IHN. But we had several that never actually got posted, so I don't know where he wanted to start the numbering it.
Yeah, there's a bunch that never made it.
Yeah, so I need to get with him and get that straightened out. I just called it 01 when I saved it the other day because there wasn't another one on that hard drive. So, but
that's why you number them the date.
So we'll call it Rev 2.
Yeah, there you go.
Rev 2.
NR7 Rebirth. Or
it's only 900,000. So
yeah, Riddle. Let's get one of the generic tack-on titles they use for sequels: Rebirth, Destruction, Forever,
Resurrection.
Whatever. There you go,
yeah.
And we'll just tack it on there and call it that. So
Seven Begins.
I don't know how many Batman titles have been now. I'm sure we can just steal one of those. Well, I'll have to get with BSV, but as soon as we get that straightened out, I'll try to get it posted. So, straight into stories that interested me.
Current events.
Yeah, I was trying to think of something other than news to put on there, because that's IHN's thing. This is more just things I saw that interested me, news-wise. So, I can come up with a snappy title for that. Then we can do
Today's
jingles.
Data Dump.
Today's Data Dump. Actually, Data Dump's not bad. Might have to do jingles or something for that just because they're fun to play with. And we've got a stupid one later, so. This one's off Torrent Freak because Torrent Freak always has good stuff. Federal court has ordered Hotfile to disclose user data, the identities and revenues of their top affiliates, and financial information on the company itself. District Court Judge Alberto Jordan argued that the MPAA needs this information to prove that Hotfile is promoting and profiting from copyright infringement. They requested a bunch of stuff, including the site's source code. I guess I didn't do a good job of clipping here, except for the site's source code. Jordan ordered that Hotfile has to hand over everything requested by the MPAA.
Now, they're trying to prove a statistical crime here, are they?
I'm not actually sure. I think they're just trying to prove that a significant amount of where Hotfile's ad revenue is coming from is on copyrighted material, stuff that the MPAA owns.
And isn't Hotfile a bit better secured than government databases? So they're going to get hacked if they give up their source code.
Well, they didn't have to give up their source code, but it was everything but. This means that Hotfile has to disclose details on all files ever uploaded, including the title, number of downloads, and the IP addresses of both the uploaders and the downloaders. And let's see here. Hotfile objected to this request because of privacy concerns and the fact that it would include gathering data on millions of files that are not specific to the case. In other words, the MPAA wasn't saying what they were interested in.
On taxpayer expense, since they're going to have to fill a whole building to get the paper copy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's see. The judge, however, disagreed and sided with the MPAA's claim that the data is needed to prove statistical analysis on how much of Hotfile's content is infringing. So
that would be an interesting way of complying. literally just printing it out on paper.
Court and read off each file and decide if it's infringing.
Well, that's the thing. They're essentially pulling the Jack Thompson here, where if you guys remember during the Grand Theft Auto Jack Thompson crap, Jack Thompson was telling Rockstar Games, send me your games before you release it, and I'll tell you whether or not you can. That's essentially what the MPAA is pulling here. It's like, oh, you got to send us everything that's ever uploaded to Hotfile so we can make sure it's not infringing on our content.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised they haven't mentioned anything about child pornography for a change.
Well,
which is surprising because that goes on there as well.
Yeah, it is Torrent Freak, and they don't they're kind of biased, so they're going to strip that kind of stuff out of the article. But okay. Yeah, this is essentially a judge letting the MPAA point at a site and demand all their data just to make sure it's not infringing. I mean, how is this not a fishing expedition?
Okay, I'm going to have to demand all your organs to make sure they're not random hobos.
Yeah, that's actually about a good equivalent claim there, Knox, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah.
I'm actually serious here. How is this not a fishing expedition?
It's pretty much so much data.
My data is going to be in there. I've downloaded stuff.
It's not a fishing expedition because it's illegal to fish with dynamite.
Yeah, I think I've downloaded stuff from Hotfile too. I don't know. I mean, I've hit all the damn file lockers.
Has anybody ever looked at their data retention policy to see if it's like a year or two or?
Well, it's 60 days. I don't know that what they have. But that's actually a good point. You know what. What about anybody who's ever used the hot file for anything that's not MPAA?
Mm-hmm.
They have that data now.
You mean that happens? People actually do that?
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Okay, I'm going to admit to something here. This torrent that I'm downloading here, it has 200 files in it. Now, I know 3 or 4 of those are infringing, but I don't know which ones. And I'm not going to look at them all right now or when it's done downloading. I'm going to look at them in 6 months. And then I'll remove them from my computer.
That's a lot of pornography.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
that's all ponies, man. All ponies.
That's the thing is most of these days are people suing for online porn. It's the MPAA and the RIAA have backed off. They send a ton of complaints, but they don't sue as often anymore. Or at least you don't hear about it. Maybe they're just doing the settling.
Well, they just got smacked in the face,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, repeatedly, they've been getting smacked in the face because they're too broad. If they went after like 2 people or 1 person, then they would have no problem.
Yeah.
But they don't want to one at a time it because it would take them forever.
They want to destroy the internet to secure their rights.
Well, that's actually not terribly far from the truth either. There was another Torrent Freak article. I pulled it because I didn't actually think it was that interesting or even surprising. But I originally had it in the show notes. It was... there's a lawyer who's suing people for the online porn stuff, and the judge ordered him to reveal how much money they're making from copyright settlements, and he wouldn't do it. He like failed to show up, and then wouldn't answer the question. And I mean, it was kind of
making how much money from copyright infringement?
Yeah, and he never actually gave an answer. Now I cut the article because it wasn't actually all that interesting or surprising, but you know,
that right. We don't know how it works.
Well, it's essentially a legal, it's a protection racket. I mean, it's like, oh, yeah, we've seen you've downloaded this file. And it's like, no, actually, I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, they grab people who don't even know what a computer is and accuse them of this shit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they're the people who are most likely to give them the money.
That's true. Although, I've gotten DMCA complaints for printers before, so I mean... And I wish I was making that up. I've actually gotten them. I've gotten them with data that doesn't make any sense. I've gotten them for IP addresses that don't belong to my network. I've gotten them saying that you were running BitTorrent on TCP port 0. I don't know how that works. And I know a lot about networking.
Someone doesn't understand binary numbers.
Well, I think more likely their automated script just didn't grab whatever the port was. And... when it generated the email form, a null got turned into a 0, but...
Mm. Ugh, gross.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, well, you're sending me a legal complaint with false data in it, so I get to throw that one out. But
yep.
Hey, you can take them to court for harassment.
we get enough of the damn
things. And you also
things.
Get to send a stop that now to the person below you.
We still get them on the wrong email address. We have informed all of the people who send us DMCA complaints that that is not the correct email address because they're sending it to somebody who doesn't work there anymore. And their exchange forwarding rules are still working, so we still get the complaints. But it's like, yeah, that email box is going to go away. You need to stop that. And, of course, they still send it there. So I'm just wondering if we start...
Of course, they're automated complaints. They don't actually read the replies.
Oh, no, no. We've tried to call them. There's several listservs for the industry I'm in, and I've checked them, and they've actually gotten to the point of calling them up and saying, "Hey, you are sending this stuff to the wrong email address." They don't care. Of course, if you don't respond, they'll still sue your ass. So
their information is as out of date as their laws.
Pretty much. So yep. Here's another fun one. Do Google and Facebook are trying to remove? Where's this from? smh.com.au. So this is from, I'm guessing...
Smh.com.
Yeah. I like the name, actually. Smh. Google and Facebook are trying to remove anonymity from the web by forcing people to sign up using their real names and banning people who use pseudonyms. This just proves that to the companies, your users are your product and your advertisers are the real customers. And I've got a fun quote in here from the article here. It says a long-ass article going over and over the arguments and the back and forth of using real names versus using pseudonyms. But, you know, I got to say, I think more people know me as Morps than people who actually know my real name.
Likewise, much.
So...
More people know me by separate names online than know me by my real name.
Okay, I have nicknames in real life that I've been using for 20 years that my friends call me because, gee, my first name's really, really common. So, you know.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I've got the most common first name. My first name is the first name they give to bodies they can't identify. I mean, that's.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm giving anything away there either.
10 years ago, my name became legal to name your children in France. So, yeah, half the children in Europe now have it, so.
Yeah, but.
Here's a bizarre one for you, because I use a stage name, because I'm an entertainer, but so do most musicians. Like, for example, Marilyn Manson, you know, Brian. Is he going to be Brian, or is he going to be Marilyn Manson?
Well, according to Google, he has to be Brian.
Yeah, that's not going to work. And that's the problem, is... You know, we have our given names, and that's just the nature of it's a legacy problem, really. I think at a certain point in your life, you should just be allowed to name yourself, and that's your name.
You can.
Yeah, you can change your name. I mean, that's...
In the U.S., you head over to the Social Security office, and then DMV, and then...
You just fill out a change of name form.
Every single
you don't even technically have to do that.
Contact with, and your job, and the IRS 5 times, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, you can actually use a legally known as, which is the name everybody knows you as.
Yeah.
Well, I've got this paragraph I pulled out of the article here. Former marketing director of Facebook and sister of co-founder of CEO Mark Zuckerberg believes anonymity of the web has to go away. Google's chairman and former CEO Eric Schmidt argues that anonymity on the internet is dangerous and that the Google Plus social network is an identity service allowing people to know who you are. You know that you are a real person opposed to a dog, fake person, or a spammer. He also says governments may eventually put
an
end to
it.
Ta-da. Yeah. Done. Well, I mean, okay, here's the thing. They're saying all this, you know, identity service, and that way people won't spam because we're forcing them to use their real name. I'm sorry, the credit card companies are having a bit of an issue forcing people to use their real names. What makes you think you're going to be any more successful?
Don't forget those.
At least it bypasses the spammer's ability to make up a name.
Yeah, because it's real hard to go online and pick names out of a phone book.
Right.
Or just, you know, I mean,
right.
Put common names together.
My name was already taken.
Yeah, what is a John Smith to do on Google Plus? Because God knows there's, you know, a million of those.
Exactly. You know, and that's the other point is, you know, gee, if they're a spammer, they buy lists of names and credit card information and whatever else.
Them.
Anyways, or they have them.
Well,
so.
I honestly think it's for advertising. It's for building their databases. It's again, the users of Facebook and Google are not the customers. They're the product.
Right.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the first time someone gets banned for having a name they don't believe.
That's already happened several times, actually.
Oh, awesome. Yep.
They've gotten several people from India because they thought the people had just, like, headbutted the keyboard.
Customers and products doesn't really work in this system. It's,
well,
services and
Knox. Their users are the product because they are selling access to those users to the advertisers. The advertisers are the customers. This is the exact same model that broadcast radio and TV uses.
Yeah.
This is also why we don't have ads on G15. But
I've only worked in public radio, so.
The best example I've seen of it is they have Dr. Kiki, who does a show on the Twit Network, and they wouldn't let her put it in there. But that's what she goes by. You know, it's like, okay, she is a doctor, and that's just a shortening of her first name. How much of a jackass are you guys going to be about it, you know?
No, apparently enough to ban her, because I remember people talking about that before I quit listening to Twit.
Yeah.
I can't stand that show anymore. I really can't.
Just change your first name to Doctor. Nothing can go wrong.
But I went to college with Michael Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the Michael Jackson, just a Michael Jackson. He's going to have fun on that.
I went to school with Jesus.
I've known several Michael Jacksons. I've known a couple of guys named Jesus. I mean...
No, actually somebody named Jesus.
Okay. How's this one? What about George Foreman's sons?
Oh, God. Yeah. And daughters, because I think he named one of those George, too, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, just the whole...
I think he missed blocking a few too many punches there.
Yeah, I didn't notice something. So, anyways, we've beaten that one to death. Let's see, the horse is dead and now a pulp on the floor. So, let's see.
Yeah, everyone's heard that story by now.
Yeah.
And everybody knows how stupid it is.
So, anyways, next one, just kind of a fun one. MSI has figured out a neat trick. They're essentially, they're calling it dust removal technology. Essentially, they run the fan in the opposite direction when you first turn on the... It's for video cards. If you've ever pulled apart a computer that's had a video card in it for more than a minute, you know how much dust those things gather. They rev the fan up to 100% running the other way for about 30 seconds when you turn the computer on to supposedly suck all the dust out and blow it back out into the computer.
Yeah, they better put a software switch in there so I can disable that, because if I put an aftermarket cooler on there, I'm not running a fan because I have, you know, water cooling. I don't want a voltage spike all of a sudden.
I didn't even think about the aftermarket cooler part. I'm not sure how well that will work, but I like the idea.
Mechanically, it's sound, but that's going to play hell with the ball bearings.
Well, and two, it's still in an enclosed space.
And with the directional fan blades themselves, you can break them doing that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've pulled apart more than enough computers and just seen them caked with the dust, so anything that kind of helps, but...
I just open mine and dust it every week.
I'd leave it to the case manufacturers. A lot of them are building filters right into the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, how about graphics cards
you can unclip the fan from?
Anyways. Yeah, and run them at 100% anyways.
Yeah, I like Tack's idea. Just take the fan off of it and clean it. You know, you can take a brush to it or run it under the faucet or whatever. Just make sure it's dry before you put it back on.
Yeah, I mean, the big pain is a lot of graphics card. Getting that fan off, that's a hell of a lot of work. And then you have to reseat it properly and everything.
Yeah. So, anyways, that was just a... See, did I say who was doing that? It was MSI.
Yeah.
I got that off techpowerup.com, so...
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I'd like to hear how it works in practice.
Yeah, and, you know, you're right. I didn't even think about the aftermarket fan scenario. If you power it from the card, you know, is it going to do that? So, I don't know. I've put aftermarket fans on video cards before, and most of them, you know, just get the Molex plug. You just, you know, unplug the original socket and hook it up to your power supply. So, I don't know if that'll actually be that big of an issue or not. Another Torrent Freak article. Let's see. There's diplomatic cable leaked by WikiLeaks that reveals the Entertainment Industry Group and law enforcement combined their efforts to infiltrate the wearer's top scenes or top sites. And they were they apparently had a meeting in 2009, and they had an informant leak music before they gave them music to leak before to gain the trust. And this isn't really terribly surprising. So they were trying to infiltrate the wares groups to figure out who
they
the hell...
They also give cops crack to sell.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same concept. They're just trying to get them in there so they can figure out who's running these wares sites. What I found interesting about this story was not that they're doing this. It's the fact that it was in WikiLeaks. This was in a diplomatic cable.
Yeah.
Well, they want to do this internationally, of course, so it needs to be in that.
Well, I think a lot of it was going on in Taiwan, but if you read the article on there, but it was just, it was weird that that was a WikiLeaks thing, not a, I don't know, just a news story or something.
See, I think this is still fallout from that Cypronet hack that they had, because all they did is they took those diplomatic the cables and just dumped them in one central database, and they didn't know where – they didn't have any
– Yeah, no, that's where it came from. I'm just trying to figure out why the hell this was in that database.
Because it's where they put every damn thing. Yeah. They didn't have any set of rules to put shit in separate categories. They were just told, as a blanket letter, put your shit in this database, and then we'll distribute it from there. Hmm. Well, all kinds of stuff is washing up now. You know, I would say that it's kind of to get onto the WikiLeaks or stay with WikiLeaks. Now they're just probably throwing shit out there. They don't really have Julian anymore, so they're like, "Fuck it, here you go, here's everything." Because they just gave out all the cables about the wars unredacted, so now everybody has all the names.
Yeah, that's really gonna suck for some of their informants, because they're probably gonna get beheaded if they're checking the things. Of course, they're a couple years old at this point, so maybe they'll have a chance to not have to worry about it so much. Anyways, next story. This one's from Sophos. This is hilarious. This woman is suing the firm that makes LoJack because... okay, well, Absolute Software is the slug from the article here. Absolute Software is in the business of helping people recover their computers, fair enough, but is taking nude snaps of the person using the stolen laptop a step too far. U.S. District Judge Walter Rice thinks so, and saying Absolute Software may have violated 52-year-old widow Susan Clemon Jeffries' rights to privacy. The laptop had LoJack on it, and she bought it. She's a teacher. She bought it from a student for like $60 or something like that. And she thought she was just buying an old secondhand laptop, and it was actually stolen. She didn't know it. And LoJack, as opposed to just sending the location to the laptop when she turned it on to the police, actually was intercepting what she was doing with it. And what she was doing was having online video chats and sex sites. So I'm guessing she was stripping for the camera, and they got screenshots. Apparently, when the police showed up, they had like screen grabs and all that other stuff. But I mean, this actually was a stolen laptop. I'm not sure on this one, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, the policy has been you're responsible for the stolen goods you buy.
Yeah,
but I'm thinking as long as they handled the pictures properly and didn't get them released, didn't have any police taking them home or anything, then...
Well, the police had them, certainly, and I think that may be the real question is how well was it handled, but, like, you know, it is...
What websites had those pictures?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing, exactly. Too, is I'm just sitting here thinking, it was a stolen laptop, you're...
Need to make sure she didn't post it, and... whoever she was with didn't post it, and the kid who was watching their laptop the entire time didn't post it.
Okay. Just a couple of notes. If you do buy a secondhand laptop, format it. Just flat out format it. I mean, yes, if it happens to be stolen, it sucks for the person who's got it stolen from.
Hard drives aren't too expensive. Just get a new one.
Just get a new one. Just don't even risk it. If it's got the little Intel vPro sticker on it, if it turns into a brick, you know what happened. I mean...
Yeah.
I guess I just don't really know where I fall on this, because it was a stolen laptop, and I don't feel that you have any right to anything you put on a stolen or hacked box. There was actually a couple of cases, this has gone back a ways, where servers were getting hacked, and the hackers were setting up IRC servers on these servers they get into. And when the servers were seized... The hackers would say that this was illegal wiretapping to get into the IRC servers they were running on hacked machines. And they actually went to court over it. I don't remember how it came out, but I'm just thinking,
yeah, not a leg to stand on.
Yeah. It's like you're on somebody else's property. Yeah, I don't think you have rights to it.
If you fall through somebody's roof while you're breaking into their house, while you're armed in a country that you're not allowed to have guns, and you can sue them for your medical bills.
That's true.
It's madness.
So, I just The only thing is, she actually paid, you know, paid the student money for the laptop, so I'm guessing she assumed it wasn't stolen, or wasn't aware that it was stolen. But still, it's I don't know.
Well, there's so many issues flying around with this, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, well, you don't really have it. You shouldn't have any rights to stuff you do with stolen property, but at the same time, she didn't know it was stolen. And plus, too, she's 52 years old. Does anybody really want to see those pictures? I mean, I kind of don't.
Apparently. I wouldn't be there.
I see hot 52-year-olds everywhere. Of course.
Some of them, sure, but... I mean, I'm just thinking the internet's full of...
On the other side of that web conversation was enjoying it.
Well, there's that.
Yeah. I guess I'm pushing it with that, so... last thing I got here, this is from Sans. They've got a big report on the DigiNotar hack. For anybody who doesn't know, I'm sure the entire internet knows this now. DigiNotar got its ass hacked hard. DigiNotar was a root CA. They sold certificates, sort of like VeriSign here, it does over here. And some highlights from the Sans report. Some of the CA servers had had part of their logs deleted, leading DigiNotar not knowing what certificates were issued. Hacker tools including Cain and Abel and specialized dedicated scripts written in a language specific to the PKA environment were found. Intentional fingerprints were left in the scripts that linked it back to the Komodo breach. There's a list of 6 CAs that have been found to have admitted rogue certs. Incomplete list of 24 additional CAs that have had their security compromised but have not shown. Basically, a bunch of certificate authorities have gotten their asses hacked and they're hiding it. Oh, and the search for the hackers continues. And apparently there's going to be an inquiry into a DigiNotar to see if they're possibly responsible for negligence.
So. Such a crazy story. But, like the nod to Cain and Abel, though.
Yeah, I like how they found Cain and Abel on their servers. It's like, I'm just thinking, you hacked a CA with Cain and Abel. That's actually really awesome on your part, or really sad on the CA's part.
I'm just thinking it's really sad really on the doing. CA's part.
Yeah. So, anyways, I think it's time to go into our mid-show break. I've got some new music. It's from Mushuto. I think I'm saying that right. M-U-S-H-U-T-O. And because Laura's been badgering about it, I'll make sure to put the link in the show notes for where you can get the music. It's licensed correctly. I know we can use this. So let me just pick one of these here. How about we do... I don't remember how long these things are. Crap. I had a couple of tracks picked out before the show, and work was kind of hectic, and I forgot about it. I think this was the one I wanted to use. So this is the Open Your Mind Depth Mix. It's 5 minutes long. I might cut this one off early, not because the song's problematic, just because of time. So I'm going to now mute the call and click play.
We'll be right back.
I cut that off a little bit early, not because I'm enjoying the track, but it's a little bit on the long side, and I wanted to get back into the show. So, is everybody back?
Yeah. Hi.
I'm back.
All right. So, and I've got another one we'll play. I think it was Flex Louder we'll close out the show with. It's a good track. Yeah, check this guy's stuff out. It's not bad. It's kind of trancey, so.
Yeah, I was checking it out earlier, actually. It's a good background noise.
Yes, definitely good to work. I was actually listening to it at work, so maybe not so good to use on a live show, but, you know, whatever. So, anyways, so now it's time for story time with Morps. Let's try this one again, so, yep.
So ridiculous.
So this one is called Don't Bring Your Kiddie Porn to a LAN Party. Or, if I break into your box and you have really bad stuff, I don't care about admitting I broke into your box.
I feel as if you should be addressing Little Johnny.
This one actually wasn't me. This was a friend of mine. I had shown him how to use some tools, and he and I used to both help run a LAN party. And at the LAN party, he was using some of the tools and techniques I introduced him to. He is kind of a former script kiddie who I was helping to get actually...
Rehabilitizing.
Well, maybe explain why he really ought to understand what it is he's doing as opposed to, you know, say, pulling up Fast Track and not understanding why he's blue screening machines all over the place. So, anyways, though, but after doing some work with him and getting him up to speed with some stuff, so we were at a LAN party. It was a fairly good sized LAN party. I want to say about 300 people there, and he brought up SMB scan and was essentially going through the file share, see what people had shared, right?
Okay.
And he found some think of the children. No, not like that folders. So we made some pretty short work of it, ID'd the box, and went and got the other people who organized the LAN party. Now, this is where things got interesting. We helped to run the LAN party, but we weren't really in charge of it. I wanted to call the cops because the guy had obvious kiddie porn on his machine at a LAN party, right?
Right, and he was sharing it?
Well, I don't think he didn't realize it was shared. It was the administrative C share. And he didn't bother to set a password on his box. So
it was newbie shared.
Yeah, $C. And I don't know exactly what tool my friend used when he was going through it, but I do know he was pulling all the pictures. So I'm not sure what he thought he was going to find. I think he was just playing, to be honest. But when he got some of these, this wasn't the stuff that it's kind of kiddie porn, like jailbait. This is like, oh, God, I'm going to take him out back and shoot him, kiddie porn.
I'm going to prison for looking at this.
Right. So when we got the other people who run the place involved, we ID'd it, and we didn't make this decision. The people who actually, you know, ran the LAN party, who, you know, like it was, they owned the website and that kind of shit. They made the decision. They banned the guy, asked him to leave, never come back. Said if he ever came back, they would call the cops. They didn't want to call the cops because they were afraid that they would have everyone in the room, everyone's stuff would get confiscated.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of reasonable.
That is a risk.
Well, with that kind of stuff, it actually wouldn't be surprising, especially the way it got found. But I do believe the police got an anonymous tip later that week. It's like, yeah, you might want to check this guy out.
I'm surprised if he walked out.
They kept it for most of the other people didn't know. It was kept fairly quiet. Again, we were worried that if the cops showed up, everyone's computer was getting confiscated. And it was a LAN party, so there was quite a bit of material that the MPAA would be interested in.
Yeah.
Just to, do
the stuff
callback.
You overlook.
Yeah. It's like stuff nobody really cares about at a LAN party, but when that showed up, yeah. So here's the deal. If you're going to go to a LAN party, maybe you shouldn't, first of all, if you're looking at that kind of stuff, I don't want to know. Because I tell you what, if it had been me directly who ID'd the guy, because it wasn't, I wouldn't have politely asked him to leave and told him never to come back. I would have been, excuse me. It's like, hey, Morbs, what are you doing with the folding chair? It's like, this was the most convenient thing we have. They show people on if you ever watch the old wrestling shows, they used to beat each other up with these things. They're using the flat of the chair. No, use the edge.
Those ones are made of aluminium.
Yes. So. Yeah. Yeah, no, he would have. If I had ID'd the box, he wouldn't have walked out of there. That shit was sick. So, just as note, if you have something highly illegal in your box and your box gets hacked into, I'm willing to bet most hackers aren't going to care to pwn up to, yes, I broke into his box because he had that.
Yeah, and I hope you're wearing a helmet.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just in general, as a rule, if you're going to go connect to public networks, maybe you ought to have a clean box to take there. Just saying.
Well, you probably shouldn't have that shit in the first place. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If you do stuff like that, you probably ought to use a different machine when you go anywhere in public.
I'm just talking about in general, because you did bring up the point of the non-disgusting and evil violations of things, the music and the video files, those kind of things in general. And I know this is a CP conversation, which you're absolutely right. The dude definitely needed to go down for that. Maybe he did. Hopefully he did.
I don't know after that. I just know that it was suggested that the police may have received an anonymous tip later.
So. Yeah, well, hopefully. I would have, if you were going to do that, I would say, don't attach them to the convention or the group anyway.
No. Like I said, that at that point, it was out of my hands. I didn't actually handle much of this.
Right.
But this story is kind of secondhand, but I know it was true because I was there when it happened. So, yeah, I just thought that one was worth getting out there. So, yeah, if you're at a LAN party, maybe you shouldn't scan for shares.
That does vaguely remember of a funny event that happened to me last year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting in a coffee shop with a friend of mine in his laptop, and I was basically just showing him some Metasploit scripts. Yeah, just running off, this is stuff you can do online to other systems.
I got one of those in the digital dojo here later, but go ahead.
Yeah, he was interested in that stuff, and he'd only done script kiddie stuff.
Yeah.
And I was saying, you have to stop being a script kiddie. It's embarrassing to me. So I was showing him this stuff, and
are you kidding?
And he looked at it and he announced that very, very loudly, oh, this is script kiddie porn.
Words that you should not combine.
In a coffee shop, no less.
Oh. Yeah, we got some funny looks before we left very sharply.
Yes, yes. I have some friends of mine who used to play Vampire the Masquerade in coffee shops. And it was always funny whenever they get the cops called on them because they were, role-playing a scene out. It's like, the phrase, oh, don't worry, I'm going to have him killed. That tends to get people's attention for some reason.
Yeah.
The things not to do in public.
Ooh, we could have an entire segment on the show, things not to do in public. Hell, I think some of us could have an entire show based on that, not just segments.
Man, I have an entire life based on that.
All right, let's go on to Digital Dojo here. Heavy, give us some good, dojo sounds there.
Oh, Digital Dojo, yeah.
I like how he
yeah, for good one.
I like how he combined the Digital Dojo with going to the toilet. That was.
And that's what the sound is usually.
Dumping some excess chi there.
Yeah, one of these days I got to sit down and actually put together something good for that. I keep meaning to do it, but this past week's been a bit weird. So anyway, first thing I've got up here, this is cool. It's called the Qubes OS, QUBES-OS.org. It's a Linux that's specifically set up to use Xen and sandbox applications, as in it's running fully separate copies of your machine, for one for your browser, one for your word processor, one for the stuff like that. And you can go in and set up different VMs. It's very nice.
Actually,
it is handy. I had the idea for something similar to this a long time ago, but I couldn't make it work, and I didn't really have the time to devote to it. But this guy has done a very good job with it. He's got the graphics on it. He's got the interface on it. How are the graphics? He's got the interface on it. Very well done. And your virtual machines, when you set them up through his tool, it actually themes the individual X servers. So, you know, you might have one VM that all the X servers get a red border, the other ones get a green border, the other ones get a blue border. That way it's very clear which of your sandboxes you're in before you do anything.
Oh, that's good. So you can keep track of it easy enough.
Right. And I really like what this guy's done. And I'm probably going to be making use of this for some projects. So,
yeah, I can only think of about a million different uses for this.
Well, I mean, if nothing else, you know, you have one browser for your 4chan and another browser for your banking.
And one browser for your Minecraft so you can control the memory leak problem. Jesus.
64-bit Java, it doesn't install automatically despite what the installer tells you.
That's true.
I have 64-bit Java installed. There's still a memory leak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, but Heavy's got a good point, though. Since it's a VM, all you got to do is reboot the VM, not the whole machine. And since the way this Cubes OS sets itself up, the VMs are... It's not like pulling up VirtualBox and actually doing a full reboot process. It's all very well hidden in the background. I think it's actually using like VNC or something to, you know, show you your different X servers. But...
I can see that being very handy.
Yeah.
So we've all hit that point where we've had to reboot and we really don't want to. Yeah, you've got one thing running and something else crashes.
Yep.
But, yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a Linux and it doesn't look like it's as nice as some of the newer Linuxes, you know, your Ubuntu's and your Mint and that kind of stuff. But very nice piece of kit. So that's definitely one to check out.
Any word on the hardware compatibility for it?
It really wants to have, you know, an i7, i5, or something with hardware virtual machine status, and I think he recommends at least 4 gig of RAM. So it wants a machine that would be good for VMs in the first place. But I've ran Xen on less than what it's asking for, and it was okay. So I think it would probably do okay on most machines. As long as your machine's fairly recent, I think it'll be all right.
Okay, so just don't lowball it too much.
Yeah, it is running full-blown Xen stack, and Xen can be kind of resource-hungry if you let it. So, next one here, this one is it's the Xcode SQLi XSS Vulnerability Web Shell Scanner. This is, somebody put together a nice little scanner here. It looks for Google Dork, SQL Injection, known backdoors, that kind of stuff. I think it's really got a lot of wrappers around Google searching for stuff. But it's just a quick, handy way to check sites for code issues. So if you run a website, you might want to look into that.
Yes, yeah, but they missed the trick with that name there.
Yeah, they
got SQLIFIXSS. Yeah. That's squiggly fixes.
I like it. So we'll have to... The squiggly fixes scanner. I like that. We're calling it that from now on.
It definitely roll off the tongue a bit easier.
Yeah. So let's see. Where was I? Room 362's got a fun blog post. He's linked to a couple of his Google Docs where he's got a bunch of commands that are good to run once you've popped box. If you do any pen testing or just play around with this stuff, it's good commands to know, you know, pulling information off the machine, shell migration, that kind of stuff. But really, I'm linking to this with the concept of maybe you ought to build a sandbox and look at what logs are generated when somebody runs some of these commands. Because you can imagine the script kiddies saying, "Ooh, look, here's cut and paste." They're not going to bother to...
That's a good idea.
They're not going to bother to change the commands in any way because they're going to take them right off the website and run them. So then you could maybe write a little Python script or Perl or you know, Windows batch, whatever you like, and, you know, watch for these logs popping up. It's like, somebody's popped my box. See here. So,
but that would be handy as well, to just to double check that there's nothing on the user end when you run a script.
Oh yeah. So, you know, figure out what these commands look like on a system when you run them, and maybe make something to watch for that. So, or, you know, hell, run them on your own box and see what they return. So.
Exactly.
Another one, this is from, I got this from Hacker News, and Hacker News has this horrible habit of linking directly to stuff without actually linking to whoever the source website, which is really annoying, because I'd much rather go to the original source than Hacker News.
But yeah, citation needed.
Yeah, no shit. But so they've got a DDoS tracer tool. It's by Max Payne Code, but like I said, it links to a hot file. Of all things, but it's
more a coincidence.
Yeah, yeah. It's a server tool that you run. It looks like it was a Windows tool, but I didn't get a chance to really play with it. But it tries to identify DDoS on your server and log it. So as opposed to trying to go through your logs and figure out who was sending commands that weren't completing or anything else that might telltale give away it's a DDoS, this thing is looking at behavior and session length and stuff like that. And just a bunch of quick, easy things to make sure that something is actually a DDoS, so you can log the IPs it's coming from and maybe try to trace it down. So.
That sounds useful. That I don't have much experience with server tools, though.
Yeah, it could be useful. What were you trying to say, Knox? I couldn't hear you there.
That sounds useful.
Could be. I'm not sure exactly how accurate it would be, because there's lots of ways to DDoS, and I don't know what this thing's looking for. Like I said, I didn't get too much chance to play with it.
I suppose as well, if you're running a Windows server, you're kind of you're behind the game anyway.
Well, you know, you'd think that, but I'm running into more and more applications, especially in the enterprise level, that they expect to be running on IIS 6 or 7 with ASP.NET stuff. So there's stuff out there locking people into it. Symantec is particularly bad about that, just to point that out.
Symantec with the semantics.
Their universe.
Don't even get me started on Symantec, man. I've got to administer a couple of their boxes. It is hell.
They're just bad, notoriously bad. This is the antivirus company that basically got rootkitted at one point in time. So, you know, they're just...
Oh, yeah, no, don't even get me started on problems with Symantec.
They were the only ones who made an antivirus that gave you a virus.
Uh-huh. No, they've had a couple of them.
What about
McAfee McAfee was great because they identified several key Windows files as viruses and just removed them. So you know, these guys have stellar reputations.
Do they still count as an antivirus?
I think
no,
at this point
as a virus now.
I think they're just a joke.
They default on Avast as a virus now.
Yeah. Let's see. Next tool up. Backbox.org. This is a Backtrack clone. It's based on Ubuntu and XFCE. Standard set of tools look to be there. Again, I didn't really get a lot of time to play with this stuff this week. I was actually still doing the show notes about an hour and a half ago. So I meant to play with this a lot more. Sorry I didn't, but it's another Backtrack clone. Looks pretty interesting. So,
is there any unique features to this that we... Would want or
it's probably got a different set of tools in it. Every one of these respins seems to take the standard set. You know, your Metasploit, your Nmap, you know, some of the the OWASP stuff, and then they usually pick and choose from there what they want. I've seen them come with Wine and Kane and Abel. I've seen others come with just a whole whack of shell scripts. So they've all usually got their own flavor of tools.
Okay.
And not everyone's heard of it, so you can be a hacker hipster.
Oh, there you go.
Agreed.
Well, most hackers do need glasses, so at least you're not just wearing the ones that are just the frames. Have you seen people doing that?
Thick-ass
just the frames? It's like you don't even need glasses?
That's when you poke them in the eyes.
See, I thought I was bad just for going online and finding a place that actually will sell you a pair of Radar O'Reilly glasses, but I'd actually use them the way they were intended as glasses.
Well, there was one guy, and I work on a college campus, right, so of course I'm going to see this shit, but there was one guy who was walking around wearing the hipster frames, didn't have glasses, and I saw him stop, and put rewetting drops in his eyes. He was wearing fucking contacts. And the hipster
people
frames.
People wouldn't recognize him if he was wearing glasses.
I don't know.
But he would have, yeah, exactly. You save yourself all the hassle when you have actual glasses. Anyways.
Yeah. So anyways, last one here. This one's kind of fun. It's from leetday.com, you know, Milliworm's replacement. It's somebody put out a Metasploit module that does a real VNC 4.1 authentication bypass. Now, for those of you who aren't keeping up, this means getting around VNC without a password. And
yeah, and a lot of people run real VNC.
The free version of real VNC, which is still pushing 4.1. Their pro version is up to like 4.6 or something. I checked because I put in all caps. You can still see it in the show notes here, but I forgot to delete it. You know, keep your damn VNC install up to date. But it turns out this is the version they're currently pushing as current on the free side, so that's not such a gripe. Don't use real VNC. Use something else.
Being secure. Premium only.
Yeah, pretty much. But I'm seriously tempted to pull this module down and play with it because I know a ton of places that are running older versions of VNC. So, and it is just a Ruby script. I mean, it's, you know, you can just pull it down and drop it in Metasploit and go. So, anyway, so we're up to topic section, and you know, I'm looking at what I wrote here. I'm not really sure there's much to talk about here, really.
Well, let's go into it and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. I put down mobile device security, laptops, tablets. You know, think. What do you do if you're going to take a laptop and go somewhere?
Let's do the real world example. We all just did our big meetup.
Not carry porn.
winning.
Yep. But we all did actually do the meetup at Gen Con. You know, except for tech, and I brought a laptop. I just basically nuked and redid that with my security. And I would say, you know, if you're going to go out, keep your important information on a thumb drive that you've got encrypted, you know, with a TrueCrypt, you know, install, something like that. You definitely don't want to actually have it on the drive. If you're going to travel somewhere, you know, FedEx the drive to wherever you're going, and then you'll reinstall it once you get there, and you have a, you know, again, a fresh install that looks like you've got a little bit of usage on it, but something that's pretty generic.
Yeah. So you're talking about like a decoy operating system there.
I
like the concept of a decoy operating system. I was going to do some of that stuff at work, and then was told other people have to be able to use these things.
My philosophy for keeping my notebook secure was making it look too old to have anything valuable on it.
Well, you know, the whole not taping your passwords and business card to the lid is fairly handy, too. I see a lot of people doing that.
Yeah, that one didn't have a password.
I like the people who put the password under the keyboard and they're using a laptop. So, you know, whenever you pick up the laptop, there's your password. I mean, that's always...
I suppose that's the other thing you do need to cover. Well, if you have a mobile device, is you don't leave it laying around. Because if you leave your laptop or your iPhone or your Android phone, whatever you're carrying, I'll steal that if you're not looking.
Well, you know, worst case scenario, somebody's going to log into the thing and change the wallpaper to Goatsy. So, I mean...
Yeah.
All right. Are we still
That's not worst case. That's best case. I'm sorry. Worst case is you get back and it's gone.
Hey, aren't we still missing a phone from that meetup?
Suave is missing a phone and I'm missing a radio. Yes.
I wasn't there, so it wasn't me.
Okay, I don't have a radio.
So it's one of those little Uden radios we were using at Gen Con?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm missing one.
Hardware team speak?
Yep.
Yeah, basically. Or as I like to call it, hardware trolling. When you're walking through the middle of a convention center and the other half of the group decide that it's fun to play the My Little Pony theme song loudly, you know.
Oh, I get to take credit for that one. That was me. I was trying to piss off RU, and it worked.
I told him to play Thundercats instead.
I was trying. It worked. I was trying to piss off RU, so I won.
And later we played the other version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Care Bears theme song.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So have we trolled Anonymous on the site yet? 2 o'clock in the morning, clock reels. Oh, that would require you to do a clock reel skip.
I haven't gotten that far yet. I suppose we could. I just haven't. Yeah, honestly, I haven't even gotten there. I mean, if we're going to troll somebody on the site, I've called them clowns on the show a couple of times, I think, although not all of them are clowns, just a large portion.
Yeah, what is it they say about trolling Anonymous, pissing in a sea of piss?
Exactly.
I thought it was more like pissing into a fan, but...
Okay. So, yeah, basically, if you're... So, let's talk about it from the point of view of, you know, we all manage other people's portable devices for them, or I do anyway, and I'm sure, you know, Morps does. Let's talk about them being a target. You know what kind of a situation they're in, what they're likely to do, if they're likely to leave a phone behind. So what do you do?
Well, I'm more worried that, you know, because it's not their personal property, they're a hell of a lot more likely to lose it or not care what happens to it or let other people play with it. I mean, it's like, oh no, that's not mine. That belongs to the school. I don't care.
Yeah, they never had it, so they can't lose it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So we talk about maybe what remote tracking software, VPNing into these things. Or,
well, you know, I was thinking about that. You know, we had the story above about LoJack, but you could do the same thing for free with, like, you know, VNC and DynDNS or, you know, like a log me in account. In fact, there was a DEF CON talk a while back that somebody had their Mac stolen.
I remember that one.
That was a good talk, actually. That's one to pull up. I should find that and put it in the show notes.
This guy actually did a really good. It was a good breakdown on how the thing happened and how he was really careful about how he gathered the data so that the information so that when he went to the cops, finally, eventually, he had concrete evidence of who the guy was.
Yeah, here it is. I just found it. I'm going to make sure I put that link in the show notes. It's DEF CON 18, Pwned by the Owner, What Happens When You Steal a Hacker's Computer. This is actually a really good talk on this subject. And what he did was he had DynDNS on it, and he had SSH and VNC on it. And so when the thing showed back up like a year and a half later, he started getting in there, pulling his data down off of it, getting his music and stuff back, and then putting in a keylogger and going through the data of the guy who was on it and all that other stuff. So let me make sure I put that in the show notes. I'm going to do that right now. So we'll put that under Digital Dojo. There you go. It's in. So.
Yeah, it's definitely a good idea on anything mobile to have some kind of tracking software on it.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, this is the guy. This guy, you know, when you do these kind of things, don't steal the guy's computer if they're a computer expert or a security expert, and because he's going to say something along the lines of this. And you will respect
my authority. Oh, God. What were you trying to say, Knox?
Unless you're worried about being tracked. Then that's a good reason not to have tracking devices.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you know, too, is why don't you just not save the really important stuff on the traveling laptop? Why don't you, I don't know.
Google Docs it all.
Well,
leave the stuff at home.
You know, if it's that important, maybe it shouldn't be on the laptop you're taking with you to the coffee shop.
Yeah, those bomb schematics, don't take them to the airport.
So... I think.
But how will you know which button is go?
Oh, it's the big red one.
Yeah, there you go. So
no. You wait for your children to call you on your cell phone.
And then your shoes explode.
Oh, hell. Ways to end up on watch lists 101. So anyways, we're at the hour here. So
yeah, I'm already there. Sorry of everybody else.
I'm going to go ahead and close us out here with this Flex Louder track again by Mushuto. I think I'm saying that right. I'm not sure. It's like an attempt to be Japanese, but the picture of the guy, he doesn't really look Japanese. So I don't know.
So probably something really insulting in Japanese because he just doesn't know what the word is.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So
I always just pronounce Western. It's just Mushuto.
Mushuto. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's not that. That's probably it. So we'll go with that. So I'm going to finish off with this Mushuto track, Flex Louder, the frequency mix. And so let me just mute the call, and I'll close it out.